Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 286, and we're going to talk about pets. Yes, we've talked about it before, but it's time to revisit it. Can you keep a dog or cat in your van happily? We're also going to talk about frozen pipes. Yes, we've talked about how to keep them from freezing, but what do you do once they are frozen? And a review of a solar panel setup that I've been waiting for a long time. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's getting cold out there, and it's causing me some serious problems. So I'm up here in Chicago, which is not a good place to be at this particular moment because the temperatures are very, very cold. And ever since I said that I would be going to VanFest, it has not gotten above freezing. And it is very, very difficult to build out a van of any kind if it is below freezing. I mean, not only is it uncomfortable, not only is it difficult to like move your hands and do intricate things with screws and stuff, stuff is brittle below freezing. Plastics break in ways they wouldn't break if it was room temperature. So I have done absolutely nothing to my rig, and I'm not even sure what I'm going to show up in. I may take the truck camper, I may rent a van, I don't know. But I am going to be there. I am going to be at VanFest, and there is a lot going on. If you, by any chance, can get to Central Florida for February 5th through 9th, I highly urge you to go to VanFest USA. The Liftoff is the name of this event. That's what they call it here because it's right on the Space Coast. And yes, there is a historic opportunity to see a manned moon launch right from the campground. Artemis 2 is scheduled to launch while we're there. And while you can never guarantee a liftoff, I did see a liftoff there the last time I was at VanFest. So it's absolutely possible, and you can absolutely see it just sitting in the campground. It's pretty impressive. So that could happen. Also, I have found out that if you are a sports fan, there is a certain event happening on that Sunday. That is a very important thing that we're not allowed to say the name of, but I understand that sports fans are very excited about this, and there will be a way to view that at VanFest, so don't worry about that. Also, someone just said that they're running a class on 3D printing and making accessories for your van and things like that, so that's a free event. You'll be able to do that too. I'm going to be recording a podcast there. There's a lot of stuff going on. Music, tours of hundreds of rigs. It's a very inexpensive way to meet a lot of people who are into van life and see a lot of vans. And when I was there 2 years ago, there were a lot of people who came who didn't even have vans. They were just curious about the life. They wanted to meet some of the people, see some of the rigs. And there were rigs of all different kinds there. I mean, giant schoolies, little tiny minivans, a lot of VW buses, a lot of ambulances. There will be one fewer this year. It's a lot of fun. If you can come, please come and find me, and we will chat, and I will give you a sticker and a pin, and hey, maybe a part of a Sprinter van. Who knows? Anyway, all the details for that are at VanFestUSA.com, and look for Liftoff. There's a bunch of VanFest events. This one is Liftoff 2026. I will be there. I know some of you will be there, and I'm looking very much forward to meeting you. A very serious topic, one that we've addressed many times, and I still get questions on it. In fact, I just got a question this week about it, and I understand the concern, and it is this. For many people, pets are family. The idea of not traveling with their pet is the same as like leaving their kids behind, and not in a home alone kind of cutesy way, like abandoning a family member. I completely understand that. And there are things that are difficult in that circumstance. You have less flexibility. So I'm going to readdress the topic about what it's like to do van life with a pet and things you can do to make it better for you and your pet. But we're also going to talk about some harsh realities here. So we're going to go down the list here from the most common animal. Yes, it's a dog. I know you're surprised. To the less common animals and talk about the realities here. And dogs are going to take up the most time because they're the most complicated topic. Why would you ever want to travel with a dog? I mean, it's obvious that there's hassles with this, but for the people who have dogs, they don't understand why people wouldn't want to travel with their dogs. Dogs offer companionship, they offer a routine, they offer security, a very unique and effective form of security. Dogs actually love traveling. Not all dogs. Dogs are individuals. They have different personalities. But most dogs actually love traveling. You know, there's that old ad for pickup trucks. Dogs love trucks. Well, they love vans, too. What they actually love is being with you. And they get to be with you an awful lot if you're in a van. You're living the van life. And they love being outside in different places, you know. Want to go for a walk? You say that and your dog's all excited. They get to go outside and sniff things. And in van life, every single time that door opens, it's a whole new sniffing experience. So dogs love van life. It is not cruel to a dog to have your dog come with you to doing van life. They love it. It's an environment that they can absolutely adapt to. Dogs have been with people since people have existed almost. And that includes nomadic peoples. Nomadic peoples almost always had dogs with them. Dogs are not anchored to a place. They're anchored to a person, and that is you. But there are a lot of challenges. You have all the same challenges you have with you, right? So you have to feed them and water them. Okay, that's the easy stuff. But the food takes up a lot of space, and it can also attract vermin. So you have to have a place to store food enough so you're not going to run out in a container that isn't going to be attacked by ants or anything else. And that tends to indicate you should have a smaller dog. The size of the dog doesn't really matter to the dog. Big dogs don't mind small spaces. In fact, one of the best dogs you can have for an apartment is a larger dog because they don't run around as much. Foresty Forest is that Jack Russell Terrier Rocco. Fun little adorable dog who has climbed more mountains than probably any dog in existence. But that typically isn't the breed that you would want because they just need to run around a lot. And if you're trapped in the van for days because it's raining or you're traveling, they're not going to like that so much. Bigger dog wouldn't care. So food and water taken care of. You have to deal with vet visits, of course. And, you know, you may have a favorite vet, but if you're traveling all the time, you won't have your favorite vet necessarily. So you're going to have a network of finding vets. That's overcomable. That's not the end of the world. But then things get a little bit more tricky. So you're going to have to walk the dog every so often. You're going to have to find places to do that. You're going to have to store the dog waste in some cases. It depends, you know, your dog has to go, you pick up after your dog, and you're not necessarily near a trash can or something. So you're going to have that to deal with. Not the end of the world, but still something to consider. And then you've got a problem that is a really difficult one. What if your dog is a barker? Well, this is going to require some behavioral management. If you're alone with a dog in the middle of nowhere, it's probably not going to matter very much. But if you're in a campground or if you're trying to stealth camp with the dog, barking can be a problem. So you do want to have the right dog for camping. I have met dogs that are not capable of doing this. And if you have one of those dogs, you've got a very difficult choice to make because I don't know that you can turn a dog into a camping dog. And again, most dogs are fine with it. But some dogs, they get motion sick, they have anxiety, it's not for them. And part of the criteria for the right dog is manageable barking. And then there are legal issues. You know, there are leash laws in different places. You're going to be in a world of 8 million different laws regarding your dog. Has to be on a leash here, is okay to run free here, can be in the park, can't be in the park, is okay on this beach, not okay on this beach. This trail can have dogs, this trail can't have dogs. It's difficult. And you're also going to run into people who have differing opinions on dogs. You know, there are some places, usually in cities, where a dog off leash is like slapping somebody in the face. If you are with your dog and your dog is off leash and someone sees you, it's just like you slapped them in the face. For people who come from rural areas, that sounds crazy. Why would you ever leash your dog? So if you're traveling around, you're going to encounter both places. Places where dogs just run free and nobody cares, and places where your dog has to be on a short leash at all times, or someone will call the police. So you have to negotiate that. And one thing to keep in mind is, and all dog owners know this, so I'm not really telling you anything, is that dogs love structure. They love to go for a walk at this time. They love to be fed at this time. The time matters. Dogs can tell time. They don't have watches. They use environmental cues to determine what time it is. And if that breaks, it makes them nervous. You know, they're dependent on you for everything. And the only reassurance you can give them is structure. Now, that's a two-edged sword. In a van, you have total control over everything. You can do a lot more structure than you can, say, if you're working a 9-to-5 and you have to work late some night. You can always make it that, oh, it's 4 o'clock, have to pull over and feed Rover. That's not so difficult. But it is something to consider. It's the structure that keeps your dog happy. Now, the big thing, and the thing that always people ask about, temperature control. Different breeds have different temperature needs and such. So you're going to want a dog that can handle both hot and cold. Huskies, maybe not a great choice unless you're going to stay up north because they actually need the cold. They're totally fine going out to sleep in the snow. That's not suffering for them. But if it gets over 90 degrees, they just don't have the physiology to shed that heat. And the same is true for all the, what I call push-nose dogs, you know, boxers and pugs like that. They don't have the ability to shed heat as easily, so they have more difficulty with hot temps. So if you don't have a dog already, evaluate that. You're going to have to spend time and effort to keep your dog comfortable, and it's harder than it is for you, actually. You think dogs are tough. Well, they have fur coats, sure, but long-term, extreme temperatures can really bother them. Cold is less of an issue than heat. You know, just like people, they can always go under a blanket. But if it's too hot, they do not sweat. Dogs, well, that's not actually true. Dogs do sweat. They sweat through the soles of their feet. So a little doggy pool can really help. If they can keep their feet cool, that will help them stay cold. The only other way they lose heat is by panting. It is not hard to get a dog overheated. And this is the question that's asked the most, because people have dogs and they have lives. And sometimes those lives and dogs don't match. They need to do something and the dog is there, but the dog can't be there for what they're doing. And that's a bit of a problem. So what can you do? All right, I'm going to give you the harsh, brutal truth here. You really can't overcome this problem by technology. That's what people keep asking me about. Is there a way I can leave the dog in the van with the air conditioner or heat on and then have a remote way to monitor the temperature so I know if anything has gone wrong? The answer to that question is yes, but there's more to it than that. Let's say you spend the hundreds of dollars necessary to install heat and air conditioning being the more difficult of those two problems, and then you install some sort of telemetry where you can tell what the temperature is in the van. That requires a Wi-Fi connection or a cellular connection of some sort left in the van, and then a device that will communicate and say, hey, the temperature is this, or an alarm at the very least, hey, the temperature's gotten too hot or too cold. Imagine if that alarm goes off. Suddenly, you have to rush back to the van, whether you're in the middle of a movie or having dinner or you're an hour away at a doctor's appointment, whatever your situation might be, just because you know there's a problem doesn't mean you have a solution. You're going to have to rush back and figure it out. Also, what if the system fails? So, you've got this alarm telemetry system, so if the heat or air conditioning fails, this thing will tell you. But what if you have a power failure? What if your big breaker trips for whatever reason, or lightning strikes? Who knows? There's somebody hits your car with their car. There's a lot of other things that could happen. And the telemetry goes down, and you think everything's fine, but in reality, the thing has just gone offline. And unless you're constantly checking it, you're not even going to know. So the truth is that if you leave your pet in the vehicle or in the campsite, it's vulnerable. You can take steps to diminish that vulnerability, but the pet will always be vulnerable. People can steal it. The dog could get caught in a cord, could choke on something. There's so many different things that can happen. So what I'm telling you is that if you want to bring your dog with you in van life, the dog has to be with you or another person all the time, practically. you can set up these systems for, you know, a 10-minute thing maybe. You know, you have to rush into the store or something. And keep in mind that if people see your dog in there and you're not there, there are a lot of people that will have no compunction at all about smashing your window and taking your dog, even if the air conditioning is on, because there are so many bad pet owners out there who literally just leave their dogs baking in the car as they go into Walmart. There's plenty of videos on that. So it's a tricky, tricky thing. You can find technology to help, but it is not an excuse. It doesn't fix everything. So what is a better way? Well, to me, a better way is that you plan as much as possible. And if you have a doctor's appointment, or you and your partner want to go out on a date night and you want to go somewhere fancy that doesn't allow dogs, get a sitter. There are a lot of apps now that have dog sitters. There's Rover, there's Wag Walking, no pun intended, care.com. There's a bunch of these services where you can find somebody who will watch your dog. Just use those. Pay is what I'm saying. Just pay somebody to watch your pet. An hour, 2 hours, whatever the case may be. That is the only responsible way to leave your van with a pet in it. And specifically, we're talking about dogs. I do not want to dissuade anyone from traveling with a dog. Van life with a dog just makes sense in a lot of ways. Dogs are a great thing to have, but they are a commitment. For me, my lifestyle, a dog just wouldn't work. That I can't offer the structure to a dog. I travel too much. I'm here, I'm there, I'm all over the place, and we don't have dogs. But we do have cats. Can you van life with a cat? Yeah, absolutely. People van life with cats all the time. And in some way, cats are a little bit easier than dogs, and in some ways, they're harder. So you have all the same problems I just mentioned with dogs, with cats, and then there's a few different ones. Cats have a little bit of an advantage over dogs in that they like the heat more than dogs, so they will tolerate hotter temperatures. They also don't require as much structure. You have to feed them, but they can self-feed if you want that to be set up. What we do with our cats is they self-feed, and then we have a wet food feeding time once a day. When we go on trips, we have an automatic feeder that takes care of that, and we don't go for too long before someone comes in the house and actually tends to the cats. And this is in a house. We wouldn't leave the cats in the RVs except for just a very short amount of time. This is a great example, actually. So the Airstream we have set up, it has power, so it has heat and air conditioning. And a couple of times we have actually brought the cats down there, mostly when one of the cats had surgery and needed constant attention. And it worked out fine. It was absolutely doable. We found a place for the litter box. Yeah, remember the litter box? Yeah, you have to worry about that too. There are ways to solve. And the cats took a while to get used to it. They're not as thrilled with moving vehicles as dogs are, but they can get used to it. And then when we put them outside, we didn't just let them roam free. We put them in a big cat crate thing. It was it's kind of complicated. It was like a habit trail for cats that unzipped. So it gave them some room to move around and just be outside, but they couldn't run around. They wanted to. I mean, they're cats. They wanted to chase the birds and everything, but we couldn't let them because we'd never get them back. Cats will kill anything that comes near them. It is not responsible to let a cat out of the house and just let it roam. I mean, there's a lot of arguments to be made here, but the amount of birds and critters that cats kill is astonishing. Even a cat that you've had in the house its whole life, if you let it outdoors, it already knows how to catch a bird. They don't have to learn that behavior. So you will need to keep them under control outdoors. Cat Lady Van Life has traveled with a cat for years. You can find her on YouTube. And again, it is a little bit about finding the right kind of cat. I think if you want to do van life with a cat, you're going to be best off starting with kittens, because they learn as kittens that this is normal. So if you're in a van and the cat is growing up in the van, that becomes their normal and they're used to it. And moving and stuff doesn't bother them. An older cat is going to have a really hard time adjusting. And yes, you should get a cat sitter, too, if you're going to leave the cat for a long time. What's a long time? More than half an hour, maybe? You have to judge that for yourself. I think 5 minutes is okay. I think an hour is pushing it. I think a day is out of the question. What about some other pets? You know, we talked about the goldfish problem here several times. But, hey, there are people doing van life with birds. Yeah, this can be done. I mean, you always have the danger the bird's going to fly away, and some people clip their wings and stuff. And there are lots of ethical issues with birds, and I don't want to get into that. I just want to explore the realities of having a bird. They get stressed, and they make a lot of noise, and you're going to have to be very careful before you do this. If you're out there in a van and you're thinking, well, wouldn't it be fun to have a parrot in the van? It might be fun. But I highly recommend you do a lot of research before you jump into that. Parrots live a long time. You can have the same parrot and have gone through 4 or 5 dogs. They live a long time. It's a huge commitment. And they don't necessarily want to be in a cage while you're driving around and bouncing on these roads. And it's not like they can't be in a cage, because if you let the bird loose while you're driving, that is a safety hazard. It is not a good idea. What about lizards and snakes? Yeah, they don't like the moving part so much, but they also don't have great needs, and they do need temperature. Their temperature needs to be set, but you can solve that with a light bulb, if nothing else. I mean, there's all kinds of heating mats and stuff. Lizards are a possibility. They will take up space in the form of a tank or something. Most people don't let lizards just run free because they're so small that it's easy to step on them, or they can hide in little things. But yeah, you could have a lizard in the van. Small mammals, hamsters, rabbits, etc. I do know some folks who've had rabbits. They basically have a hutch under their bed in the garage area. Sure, you can do that. Rabbits are a tricky one. Rabbits are kind of fragile. They don't live all that long. And they need to be able to eat their poop, which sounds weird, but it's part of their digestion. They have 2 different kinds of poop, and they eat the first one. So you have to, like, leave them in the cage with that. If you don't, they're in trouble. That is a little weird for some folks. And they're generally not a good choice. They generate odors. So small mammals, this is not a great idea list for pets. And finally, fish. The goldfish. Nope, I don't know of a good way to keep any kind of fish in a van for van life unless you're very stationary. I am getting close to the edge of thinking that you can have snails. You can have like an eco tank that is mostly plants and has some snails. And if you can find a way to stabilize it so it won't slosh around too much, that might work. But again, they are temperature sensitive. In fact, I have a tank now that I'm doing research on, and it has a 4-degree range of safety. It's only 4 degrees. So if you went to the movies on a summer afternoon, your tank would already be too hot. So here's how I deal with the problem. I would love to have a dog I could travel with. I mean, you know, Travels with Charlie, Steinbeck, traveling the country with his dog, absolutely very romantic, and the companionship of a dog is very hard to beat. But the way I compensate for it, knowing it wouldn't be fair to a dog to travel the way I travel, is I borrow everybody else's pets, and I treat all of nature as my pet, if that makes any sense. Not in the cute, cuddly way. I'm not out there, you know, whistling, and the birds land on my arms, and squirrels come up and give me a kiss on the cheek, although I do know somebody who does that stuff. No, I am in their cage. Nature is their cage, and I'm in it. I mean, it sounds terrible, but it's actually kind of accurate. It's like, I'm not seeing them in the zoo. I'm in the zoo with them, and I have that philosophy, and I get my enjoyment of animals simply by sitting next to my van and watching them do their thing, and I know for a fact that's how they prefer it. So if you have any comments on anything I've said, or if I've missed anything, this is a very important topic for people, and I thought I would address it again. But let's keep that conversation going. If folks have pets and they have things I didn't mention, or folks want pets and have questions, send them to me. I will get the answers. I will find them from somebody who is more experienced than me. Thanks to everyone who has donated at buymeacoffee.com/built2go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Because of you, there are no ads. Special thank you to those who do this every month. I really appreciate it. If you would like to keep ads off the show, visit buymeacoffee.com/built2go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And we thank you. Tech Talk. Frozen pipes. So we have talked a lot about how to keep your pipes from freezing, but I don't think we've actually talked about what to do if your pipes are frozen. You know, sometimes people get trapped. They get trapped. They think, oh, I'm going to just avoid the cold temps. I'm going to do the chasing 70 thing, you know, and then a freak storm comes up and suddenly it's 25 for a couple days and stuff starts to freeze. And stuff, and there's a lot of stuff that can freeze. It's not just pipes. It's not just water, but like your doors can freeze or your windows can freeze. Actually, in my truck the other day, I pressed the button for the window to go down and it was frozen and I didn't know it. And the motor went, poof. And I was like, geez, that was close, because that motor has a little part in there that will break before the window comes down in some cases. And fortunately, that didn't happen. The window seems to be okay. So let's talk about some ways to fix this. First off, since I just mentioned it, the windows thing, you can fix that by spraying silicone in the seals around the windows. That prevents the windows from sticking like that. So that's how you fix that. But for frozen pipes, you have to be very careful. If your pipe is currently frozen, you turn on the water and nothing happens is basically the symptom. The pump won't even turn on because the pump has pressure. It's satisfied. That could indicate a frozen pipe. And if you look around and everything else makes sense, you know, there's volts and there are no leaks, because if there was a leak, the pump would come on, then you might have a frozen pipe. What you want to remember is slow. Those pipes are under an incredible amount of pressure. What causes frozen pipes to burst is pressure. Water freezes, it expands, and that increases pressure. And water is a semi-compressible fluid, which means really not very compressible. It can't stand too much expansion before the pressure gets too much for the pipes. Copper pipes are especially sensitive to this. PEX pipes are a little bit less sensitive, but all pipes are sensitive to this. The very, very best way to deal with frozen pipes is to just turn on the heat, open all your doors of your cabinets and everything, expose those pipes to the heat in your rig, and then have a fan blow on them. Not a heater, a fan. You want them to melt slowly. You don't want to put a blowtorch on them. You don't want to light a candle and stick it under the part that's frozen. None of that. Very slow. And yes, that can suck. You want water. You need to use the water. You want to flush the toilet. You want to make coffee. I get it. So while you're doing that and while you're defrosting all that stuff, go to the store and buy drinking water and use that until it's done. That is the safest thing to do. Also, learn how to repair your pipes. Doesn't matter if you have an RV that somebody else built or you built your own rig. Learn how and bring stuff with you to fix those pipes. I learned how to sweat pipes, copper pipes, because of this. I lived way out in the country in Virginia. Getting a plumber took forever, and I had a garage that some previous owner decided to remove the heat from, but it had water pipes in it. And on a particularly cold day, the pipes froze, and I needed to turn the water on. We had to actually turn off the well for the entire house, and that was a problem. And so I looked at the pipes and saw how they were burst, and I learned how to cut pipes. Cutting copper pipes with a little tool is dead simple. And then you put a little bit of flux on each end, and you buy a coupler that goes on the broken parts, and you use a torch, and you apply the solder, and you wait until it's hot enough, add the solder, and it flows on the flux, and that's how you seal a copper pipe. And you really should watch a YouTube video before you try doing that, other than listening to me. And with PEX, you just cut out the bad part of PEX, the bad part of the PEX pipe, and you add the connectors that you come. If you did put PEX in your system, you already know what I'm talking about. If you have a system with PEX pipes, those plastic pipes, sometimes they're red and blue, often they're clear. If you have that kind of system, you're going to have to do some research and learn how to repair those. But there's no soldering involved with those. It's just cut and sometimes crimping. When I first bought the Winnebago, the Tiki Bago, and started driving it, I had frozen pipes. When I got to Montana, one of the pipes froze. And I knew nothing about this system in this thing. I had just gotten it. I didn't even know there was water in there. I didn't think it had been winterized, but I knew there was no water. And yeah, sure enough, this was before they thought to put in low point drains and campers. The copper pipes burst. And I just went to Home Depot and yeah, I welded them. I sweated the pipes under the sink in the cold. Slow is good. And then repair if you have to. YouTube will help you, but you are so much better off preparing for this now than having to solve it then. Always have a kit with you of some sort that you can repair the kind of plumbing pipes you have. Now, what if you have frozen DEF, which I've had? DEF is the diesel exhaust fluid, or frozen holding tanks. Okay, this is a little different with these. Frozen DEF, the only way I know to unfreeze DEF is to take the entire vehicle and put it somewhere above freezing for a period of time. That's literally what I did to solve it when it happened to me. And you have to figure out how to do that. You can drive your diesel van without DEF. It won't be happy. There'll be all kinds of sensors and stuff that'll be very, very angry with you, but you're not harming the engine. Remember, DEF doesn't do anything for the engine. It's just to make the exhaust more environmentally friendly. So get that thing south, get it into a heated garage as soon as you can, and it will take time. There is no quick way to defrost DEF. Do not pour hot water in there. Do not pour hot DEF in there. None of that. Your van should have a DEF heater in it that when the van's running, it turns on and heats the DEF. So if your DEF is freezing, you have to check and see if maybe that element isn't functional. And yeah, for a Sprinter, that could be a $1,500 repair. Ouch. Now, holding tanks, same thing. The real bad thing is if you get in the situation where your holding tanks are full and frozen. There's nothing you can do, folks. You just have to go somewhere warm and wait, and that means you can't use the toilet, and that is not a fun situation to be in. So in weather like that, you know, it's kind of funny, because in weather like that, you actually want the tanks to be a little bit more full because it takes more time for them to freeze. But if you're winter camping and you know it's going to be cold the whole time, try to keep those tanks empty as much as possible. And in my Airstream, it has heated tanks. A lot of rigs have heated tanks. But that isn't really for, like, below zero heating, you know? That's if it's on an edge case. So don't think you can take your vehicle and just go camping anywhere you want just because it's heated tanks. It's really just for those edge cases, not for, like, you know, Arctic tundra kind of camping. That requires something different. Anyway, probably talked too long about this, but it's on my mind given what I see out the window. Product review. So in preparation for VanFest, I figured, well, I better come up with some solar panels for my rig. I have a weird problem with this rig. Now, to be clear, we're talking about a 2019 Ram 1500 Classic pickup truck with a full-size bed. And in that bed, I have a fiberglass pod with a floor and kind of like a shell that takes up the entire bed and sticks up over the roof a bit. And I'm very excited about this thing. I think this is going to be a wonderful solution, but I haven't had any time to work on it. And yes, I can charge from the truck, you know, but when I'm going to VanFest, I'm not going to be running the truck. So I want some solar. I mean, it's Florida. Lots of sunshine. I have a bunch of 100-watt rigid panels laying about, but they're actually too big for the roof. Looking at all these other solutions, and then, you know, time is running out, and I don't have time to work on this thing. So I thought, well, what about a portable solution? After all, as I'm driving down there, I can just use the battery-to-battery charger that I haven't installed yet. I don't need the solar until I get there, and once I get there, I'm not going to move the vehicle, and I can just use portable solar, and that would be a good thing to have anyway. Now, I don't like the portable solar systems. I have mentioned this before. I find them pretty ridiculous in many cases. Most of them aren't waterproof, which is insane. Many of them come with their own little crappy solar controller, so you have to hook them up straight to a battery rather than, say, to a Jackery, or maybe you can turn the controller off, I don't know. And they're crazy expensive. And so for all those reasons, I haven't bothered with a portable system. I have used my rigid 100 watts as portables. I have hauled them around and just hooked them up to a cheap controller, and that works great, and I can leave them out in the weather, and nobody cares. But I did find, I think, the perfect solution for this. Vevo, has a new 400-watt portable solar panel system, and it's exactly made for me. I mean, it's like exactly what I want. It's not small. It is the size of a rigid 100-watt panel. Each panel of this system is, I've got the measurements here, 38.86 inches long, 22.8 inches wide, and 2.91 inches high, or thick in this case. And they fold up, so you basically have the size and weight of a single 100-watt rigid panel, but it opens up to be four panels. And each of these four panels is actually kind of the same guts of a rigid panel. These are a little bit flexible, but not very flexible, which is fine. It comes with stands that are built into it, very sturdy stands that you fold out. and it comes with every cable known to man. So it has the normal MC4 connectors, and then you can connect it at this adapter that has Anderson and XT60 and DC5521 and a bunch of different bullet connectors. Basically, this will plug into anything. It will plug into any power bank that I've ever seen, and you can mix and match. I mean, it's really, really flexible in that way. The one thing it can't connect to is a battery. If you want to connect this to just a raw battery, you're going to need a controller. But they're like $9 for a cheap PWM controller, so that is not an issue for me. And my plan is I'm just going to bring this down there and set it up. I'll either put it up on the roof or I'll put it on the ground angled towards the sun. The only issue with it is wind. It could blow over. Absolutely, it could blow over. You could also just lie it flat on the ground, and then you'd have less of a problem with that. It is completely waterproof. This thing is meant to stay out in the rain, and it does come in a 200-watt and a 100-watt version. But I'll tell you, the thing that really pushed me over the edge on this is the price. The 400-watt version, the one I got it on sale for $241.99. That is a great deal for 400 watts. It looks like the price has changed, however, since I got this just last week. Today, it is $299. The 200 watt is $131.99, and the 100 watt is $66.99. Again, that's a great deal. And all these R's, it's the same system. They're just taking panels away. So, hey, I have not used this yet, right? It's stupid to review something I haven't used. But it's a solar panel, so long as it does actually produce output, I'm going to be pretty happy with it. The reviews are good, and if you buy it straight from Vivor rather than from Amazon, it's a lot cheaper. Right now on the Vivor site, they list it as $249.99, and they always have crazy discounts and stuff, and I will try to get you an affiliate link, which should even have a bigger discount, in the show notes, and I'll have links to both of those if I can find one. I haven't actually looked yet. So, to me, this is a great solar panel solution for a portable system if you have space for it. For me, what I'm going to do with this is I'm going to find a way to mount it to the ceiling of my rig so that it won't take up any space other than eating up a little bit of ceiling height, which is only a couple of inches, and it'll only be in one part. When I'm camping, it will be outside, so it's not a big deal. If you have serious space problems, this might be too big for you, but it's also 400 watts. That's a lot of solar. You don't need that if you're just running a refrigerator and lights and stuff like that. If you're running, cooking and maybe a little tiny bit of AC, yeah, you might want to get the 400 watt. Or if you're in a place like Canada where you have just less solar to work with. Anyway, I think the quality looks good. Like I said, I haven't tried it, and I will report back if it does not perform as expected. But this looks like a really nice solution, especially if you're a person who is dealing primarily with power banks. I will have links in the show notes. Tales from the road. So when I first went to VanFest, of course, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know what was going on. And I had volunteered to help out with parking control and stuff like that. So I got there early, got a primo parking space, and started helping other people and park and stuff. And I did that for about a day. And then the next morning came, and it was a little awkward because they have this, now they have several, but there's a row of, show campers, like campers that are open for tours. And some of them are absolutely amazing pieces of art, and others are underway, and some are like my ambulance. But I let people tour the ambulance just because it was interesting. It was different. It was certainly not something I wanted to show off. There was a competition for best rig or whatever. I was not in the running, nor did I want to be. That is fine. But it was still a little awkward because I was basically camping on display. So all these other people around, and there's my camper, kind of like I open the door and there's a whole world of people out there, and it's just a little weird. And I started to just turn inward and become like very introverted, and I was like, I'm just going to stay in here all day and I'm going to shut the door, and But then why even bother going to VanFest, right? I mean, it's okay if I have a role. Like, if my role is to be showing off the van, I can deal with that. If my role is to be giving a talk, I can deal with that. Help people with parking, understood. It's when I don't know what my role is that I don't know what to do. And that is just a typical social awkwardness situation. And I thought, all right, I'm going to make an attempt to deal with this. So I set up my chair, did my little coffee ritual and sat out there with my coffee. And people walked by and I waved. And it was funny just watching people parade by. You know, there goes somebody with a dog. There goes somebody with a suspiciously yellow-looking Gatorade bottle. There goes somebody with a rather heavy-looking awkward bag that I'm not going to ask about. You know, it was just it was a whole walk of life of all different kinds of people. All of them were friendly. And then there was this one woman who was very friendly. And she said, "Hi. I don't remember her name, unfortunately, but we're going to call her Barbara. I'm Barbara. How are you?" And it's like, "Hi, I'm Jeff. You know, is this your rig?" And, you know, we talked about the rig a bit. And she said, "Okay, it's time to go now. You come with me." And she had a bit of an accent. I think it was a little bit of a French accent. And it wasn't like, "Would you like to come with me?" It was like, "No, we are going now. You're coming with me and we're going this way." And I'm like, okay. So I closed the door of the van and followed her, and we went to the schoolies were right by me and went to the schoolie community, and she did the same thing. "Hi, I'm Barbara. Who are you? That is a nice, interesting rig you have. Okay, time to go." And she would grab them. And after about 10 minutes, there was this group of us, like 20 people, wandering around the campground, and we were the welcoming committee, just created by this one woman. Everybody was very cheerful, and we just welcomed everybody, and we spent about an hour walking around the whole circuit and just made everybody feel better and get super excited for the day's activities. This one woman did that. Just her attitude and the way she was able to sort of invite you very strongly to join her with something that I was reluctant to do, but was absolutely the right thing to do. I met a whole bunch of people, and by the end of that day, I felt like I had friends there. Now, it's not necessarily that we kept in contact and all that kind of stuff, but that's on me. The invitation was there. They invited me to all these other van life events. They invited me to another one in Florida 2 weeks later. They invited me to Schoolie-palooza, to a schoolie event up in the UP. And I had hoped to be able to get to these things, but, you know, life has other plans. However, if you were somebody who is socially awkward like me and is looking for instant community, VanFest and other events like that are places where you can find it. And this Barbara woman is the kind of person you need to find. I think they exist in almost all of these fests. You just have to find them. And then just be friendly and honest with folks. Ask questions about their rigs. Answer questions about your rigs. And after a short amount of time, you're going to get invited to go to all these other events. And then you will have a community. You will meet people and see them all over the world. And they won't be your constant traveling companions. But, you know, "Hey, I saw you at Schoolie-palooza. Or weren't you in Quartzsite last year?" That kind of thing. And that is a nice, really cool aspect of van life. It's a little bit different than making friends at, say, a football game or whatever, because at a football game, you're there to see an event. Van life, you're living a life with these people. You're breaking bread with them. You're helping them solve problems. I remember that there was a woman in a schoolie, and the screw fell out of her Max Air fan with the knob to actually close the vent. And she came and said, "Help, I don't know how to fix this." And so we all went in our own rigs and looked at our Max Air fans and took them apart a little bit and tried to find the right parts and stuff. And I unfortunately did not have the right setup to fix her, but I'm sure somebody did. She probably had 10 people helping her out. And they didn't want anything other than to help her out. It was that kind of a community. Anybody needs something, everybody's going to jump on it and try to help them. That's why I encourage people to come to VanFest and these other things. Not everyone's looking for community. Some people are looking for solitude. I talked about that last week. But if you are one of those people looking for community in van life, I think this is literally the best way to do it. The nasty people, the predatory people, the scary people don't come to these things in my experience. It's only the open, curious, and interesting people. And boy, they're interesting. These people come from all different walks of life. You've got millionaire retirees. You've got the dude who quit school at eighth grade and has been living in his van fixing motors ever since. You've got the couple who moved here from Germany 20 years ago and just kind of roam around. I mean, it's pretty amazing. If this is the thing you're looking for, VanFest and other festivals like it are the thing that can provide it. And absolutely, if you see me out there, come talk to me. I would like to talk to you. Resource recommendation. With all the crackdown on homelessness slash van life slash you can't park anywhere, you're going to get arrested issues going on in the U.S. today, I am continually looking for solutions for folks. And the only reliable solution I can come up with is pay to camp. And this is not a solution. For a lot of people, this is just not sustainable. And it's more expensive now than ever before. It used to be camping was cheap, and it ain't so cheap no more. It is kind of crazy how expensive campgrounds have gotten and how hard they are to find. They fill up very quickly. I like going to VanFest here. It's difficult to find campsites right now in Florida anywhere. So it's one of the nice things about VanFest is it's a cheap way to camp in Florida in a place where you're allowed to camp and there are some support services. So what do? It's late at night and you need a place to camp and you're willing to pay, but you don't know where to go and you don't care about the campground. You're not going to use the swimming pool. You know, you're not going to go to the Grand Ole Opry review or any of that crap. You just want to spend the night safely. Well, Love's, the huge truck store franchise, does have camping spots. Now, I'm not talking about just parking in their parking lot. I know a lot of people look to Love's as the first place they're going to spend the night for stealth camping. But Love's is one of the very few places I've had a problem where they have come up to me and said, don't spend the night here. Love's is not a guaranteed place to stay. Some Love's don't care. Some Love's in urban areas, especially where two interstates meet and things like that, they have a hard time fitting in all the trucks, and they don't want anyone in there other than trucks. It's a contentious issue. But because of this, some of them have actually set up a specific area just for RVs, and you count as an RV, and they have hookups and Wi-Fi and everything you need, and you just pay, and there's your spot. There's no swimming pool. There's nothing. It's literally just a parking space with hookups. But sometimes that is the best thing. If you're traveling and you just want to get from point A to point B and you need to sleep, this kind of thing can be exactly what you want. And there is a directory of these, and I have it linked in the show notes. So the directory is at camplife.com/campground/loves+RV+stops. And it tells you everything about each one. They're all over the country. In fact, there is one not too far from VanFest. It's in Auburndale, Florida. It has 30-amp service, 50-amp service, full hookups. It's pet-friendly. They have sewer and water and Wi-Fi. So let's just go through the process and see what that looks like. I found the site. It looks absolutely horrific. I mean, it's literally just a sea of concrete. But I don't care. I just want to spend the night, right? So they have 10 spaces. And they have special freezing weather rules where they have fresh water, but you're not allowed to hook it up to your rig, which makes sense. They have a limit of 27 nights. Oh, boy, you'd have to be desperate to stay there 27 nights, I'll tell you. So let me put in some dates. So let's say I wanted to stay here on the way to VanFest, right? So I'm going to put in, say, February 3rd, and I'm going to leave on February 4th. And the site type I want is a back-end site. That's all they have. One adult, one vehicle, no pets, and I have a van. Van is an option right there. The length, all right, I'll put 21 feet. Slide outs, none. Amenities, I want water. And 30 amps. I don't care about anything else, actually. And then I can select the site. Honestly, I don't even need power. And I'm going to select this site. And that is $61. It is not cheap. It's hard to believe that just that is $61. You don't get any other amenities. But yeah, $61. You have the amenities of the Love's, world's largest convenience store, right next door. But that's it. $61. But it's a safe place to spend the night. You have the resources you need. You're not going to get the knock. And there are definitely times that that is worth $61. So just remember that this is here. There might be a time you need it. I don't imagine this is going to be your regular thing, but it does exist. And it's at camplife.com. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 286. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. If you need to get a hold of me for any reason, please drop me a line at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And I hope to see you at VanFest. Until then. remember the words of Groucho Marx, who said, "Outside of a dog, a book is man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's too dark to read."